And a line drive to center field. That's going to be down, and the Royals are on the board. And Witt is 3-for-3. Gutierrez comes down from third. And it is 3-1 in the fifth inning.
And that would be the only run the Royals would muster as Whit Merrifield, 3-for-4. Batting average up to 279. Ryan O'Hearn had a couple of hits. And Nicky Lopez a couple of hits. That's it for the Royals. Jorge Soler yesterday 0-for-4. He's hitting 179. Hunter Dozier struck out twice, 0-for-4, hitting 155. Those are your number 5 and 6 hole hitters in your lineup are supposed to provide power and run producing capabilities. And Jorge Soler and Hunter Dozier have absolutely flat out been bad at the plate virtually all season long. And we have now played 76 of 162 games. So the Royals, what are they going to do? They've got money tied up in Soler and Dozier, and those two guys are way underperforming, if there's such a term. Royals, once again, dig a hole early. They were down 3-0 in the first inning. They had 3 errors yesterday. That doesn't help any causes. Brady Singer goes 5 innings, 4 hits, 5 strikeouts, 3 walks, allowed a home run. Jacob Brent, Scott Barlow, and Greg Holland did a good job in the bullpen afterwards to give the Royals a chance, but the Royals just couldn't do anything offensively, and they continue to really struggle with runners in scoring position. Let's hear from the manager, Mike Matheny, first on his pitcher, Brady Singer, and his outing yesterday.
Actually, good stuff in the first, talking about a triple and a home run, both on 0-2 pitches. Fastball, yeah, life. It was good depth to it. Ball was jumping. He got into even the ball that was thrown away. That was an 0-2 count, too. I mean, he was pounding the strike zone. And unfortunately, the 0-2 pitches got him. It's amazing how in the first inning, you know, that can set the tone for the game. But he continued, I thought, to make really good pitches. Slider came along real well.
So the Royals get swept by the Rangers. It's the Royals' 5th 3-game sweep so far this season, and came at the hands of a team, the Rangers, that entered the weekend 21 games under 500, 20 games out of first place in the American League West. The Royals were outscored 21-5 in the series. Royals 1-5 on their 10-game road trip. They head back to the East Coast after just losing a 3-game series in New York to face the American League East-leading Red Sox, who the Royals did take 2 out of 3 from recently at the K, but this time it's at Fenway Park. Red Sox coming off a sweep of the Yankees this weekend. It's a 4-game series at Fenway beginning today. It'll be a 6-10 this evening. Danny Duffy on the hill, his second start since coming off the IL. He only threw 2 innings last time, kind of on a pitch count. And the Royals will try to get back on the winning track. They are the worst 10 games under 500 now at 33-43. The Royals continue to, like we said, really struggle with runners in scoring position. 1-for-9 with runners at scoring position yesterday. They had 1 inning where they had the bases loaded, nobody out, and didn't score. The Royals offensively are inept, and their starting pitching typically starts slow, gets behind, and then the offense isn't providing much. The Royals in their last 21 games are hitting 169 with runners at scoring position. You're not going to win many games doing that. You're just not. And so the Royals, on top of it, they get behind early, and then they can't muster any offense. And Sunday's loss marked the Royals' 4th 5-game losing streak this season. The only other teams that have that, the Rockies and the Pirates, who've done it 4 times. So congratulations. The Royals have tied the Pirates and Rockies for being bad after the Royals, of course, started the year 16-9. So Royals, is that a low point of the season? I think it is. When you go to Texas to take on a team that's 20 games out of first place and you can't even win one game, and you were outscored 21-5, and the Rangers aren't a great pitching outfit either. I know the 11-game losing streak you could say is a low point of the season, but they bounced back after that. But they were still, I don't know. This is, to me, it's a low point because it's the worst they've been all year, 10 games under 500. They worked so hard to get back over 500 after an 11-game losing streak, and now they've given it all back and then some. And it's not going to get any easier as they take on the Red Sox tonight there at Fenway Park, the first of not 3, but 4 for the Royals. Local sports information, the Shrine Bowl in Topeka, the West won in a low-scoring affair, 14-0. West scored a touchdown in the first quarter, 1 in the 4th quarter to seal it. They went in Topeka 14-0 over the East. We have the following story posted at our website, nckssports.com. 13 Kansas High School senior football players have been selected by the Coach Bill Snyder Family Sunflower Chapter of the National Football Foundation. Could we have a longer name? As the 2021 Scholar Athletes from the North Central Kansas area, Lakeside's Wyatt Everly and Landon O'Hare of Lincoln were selected. The full list is posted in ckssports.com. Congratulations to Lakeside's Wyatt Everly and Lincoln's Landon O'Hare for making that list. Very distinguished list and quite an honor for those two young men. And once again, that story posted in ckssports.com. All right, now here's the good news. I gave you the bad news about the Royals. The Royals are 33-43. They've had a 4 or 5 game losing streaks. Their starting pitching starts slow, hasn't been very good lately. The offense is abysmal, especially with Soler and Dozier right now. Mondesi's on the injured list. But there could be help on the way. Bobby Witt Jr., who's only 21 years of age, second overall pick out of high school in the 2019 draft, got off to a slow start at AA, but about a month ago, he kicked things into high gear. And on May 29th, Bobby Witt Jr. homered. The following day, he hit 3 homers. And starting with that May 29th game, which is basically a full month of baseball, Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting .362, 6 doubles, 3 triples, 9 home runs, 23 RBIs in just 24 games. He might get a promotion to AAA here very soon. Now, this is why you don't want to get a lot of information from national writers. Matt Snyder is a writer for CBSSports.com, and he has a story about Bobby Witt Jr. really tearing it up, and he could be making a big jump from AA to AAA. And he says in his story, there is nobody blocking him at the major league level at shortstop. Nicky Lopez isn't the long-term option. See, right away, if you're a Royals fan, you know that guy doesn't know what he's talking about. Because Aldebaran Mondesi is the Royals' everyday shortstop. The problem is he's hurt almost all the time this year. But Mondesi will block Witt at Bobby Witt Jr. at shortstop, unless Mondesi is hurt. So Bobby Witt Jr., where he's going to probably play when he gets to the big leagues, if Mondesi can be healthy, which he was last year in the shortened season, but this year he is not. But yes, there's a guy blocking Witt's path to being the starting shortstop for the Royals. It's a guy named Mondesi, who's 25 and could be a superstar if he stays healthy. How does Matt Snyder of CBSSports.com not know that? Here's why. Because he writes an article, he types something real quick, he looks at the starting lineup in the box score and goes, oh, Nicky Lopez is starting shortstop for the Royals. Well, he's not going to stop Bobby Witt from being the next shortstop of the Royals. And what he doesn't understand is the Royals' best shortstop is on the injured list for the third time this year. So, trust me, the future of the Royals is Bobby Witt Jr. at third. That's the future of the Royals. Bobby Witt Jr. at third, Mondesi at short. That's your left side of your infield. That's the future. Now, if Mondesi can't stay healthy, then yes, Bobby Witt Jr. might be your shortstop of the future. But he has been raking at AA, and he's only 21. So who knows? Maybe September he'll make his Major League debut, and that would get Royals fans excited because right now there's not a lot to be excited about based on how they're playing on the field. Seattle Mariners pitcher Hector Santiago became the first Major League Baseball pitcher ejected under new foreign substance protocols. He faces a 10-game suspension. He claims he did nothing wrong. It's just some rosin mixed up with some sweat, so we'll see. Of course, they will appeal, the Mariners and Hector Santiago. The big news over the weekend is what happened in Omaha, Nebraska. If you don't know what happened, let me fill you in. North Carolina State had to play with half of their roster in a game against Vanderbilt. And then they were told that it would be a no contest, that they didn't, so forth and so on, COVID-19 players that had tested positive, and NC State had to do a no contest. Here's the rundown of what took place. Sunday, June 20th, okay, so let's go back a little ways. The NCAA confirmed that testing the day before the Vanderbilt game revealed no positive COVID-19 test results among all members of the NC State traveling party. NC State was given the all-clear to play Vanderbilt on Monday. It was a great day for the Wolfpack. They defeated Vanderbilt 1-0 to move into the winner's bracket. The NCAA said they found out later Monday after that win that one of the players who had the bug had a roommate removed at some point on Sunday, which created some concern inside the NCAA. Tuesday, the player that the manager said had a bug on Monday tested positive in an antigen and PCR test on Tuesday, which deemed him not cleared to participate and thus was directed to isolate. The roommate of the individual who was in direct contact was then directed to quarantine, according to the NCAA, and so forth and so on. We continued to test the close contact in hopes that they could come out of quarantine sooner and perhaps they could actually play. Also on Tuesday, NCAA sought out NC State to find out which members of the traveling party the manager was referring to when he said some of our guys have a bug. Those persons were identified and then tested on June 22nd, and they were negative, so that was great news. Between Tuesday and Friday, June 25th, NC State attempted to have the roommate of the first individual tested each day to potentially test out and be able to pitch. That request was not granted, though. The individual wound up testing positive later in the week anyway. Then on Friday, given the fact that NC State was scheduled to play Vanderbilt at 1 o'clock that day, it was not considered to be a testing day. However, the individual who was in close contact with the COVID-positive player was tested in hopes that he would test negative and could come out of quarantine sooner and perhaps be able to play. However, that player tested positive for COVID-19. He was deemed out of action, and that gave NC State 2 confirmed tests. The same morning, there were 2 more players that shown symptoms consistent with COVID-19, so there was further testing that was done. Later on, the NCAA informed NC State that unvaccinated players would be removed from the game and only vaccinated players could play in the game. The NCAA gave NC State the option to either forfeit and try to play Saturday or play on with a limited roster. The manager and his team opted to play on Saturday, though NC State sources say they proposed to the NCAA to play a doubleheader between the two teams on Saturday instead. That request was denied by the NCAA. At the start of the game, unvaccinated members of NC State were taken to the Marriott and tested. All of those unvaccinated members of the team were negative for COVID-19, including several more prominent players on the roster. None of those players were able to return to the ballpark in time to enter the game, which makes totally no sense. With NC State having 4 positive COVID-19 tests, the team reached outbreak status, which then caused the NCAA to get all members of the team tested, including the vaccinated members who played in the Friday game against Vandy. That game was won by Vandy 3-1, as NC State only had 13 of their 27 players available to play. So it was touched upon how it's possible to test vaccinated players. NC State sources estimate that full team testing occurred around 7:30 p.m. Friday evening, and that by 11 p.m. that evening, they had still hadn't gotten word on all the test results. There's a lot of frustration from the NC State side of things on the lack of communication during that time frame. Shortly after that point, the results began to trickle in for each player. 4 players, all vaccinated, had tested positive for COVID-19, with all other players testing negative. 8 total members of North Carolina State's traveling baseball party had tested positive for COVID-19. According to NC State sources, it was around 1 a.m. Saturday morning that the NCAA informed the Wolfpack they were declared a no contest for Saturday's game against Vanderbilt, and thus their season was done, just like that. It was then that all COVID-19 negative players decided to make the trek over to TD Ameritrade Park for one last picture behind home plate after a somber meeting with their head coach and his staff. With 8 positive tests and impending contact tracing, the NCAA's point of view was that it would be impossible for NC State to finish the tournament while also caring about the health and safety of participants. Of course, that reasoning will be hotly contested by those who saw countless send-off and welcoming parties at different team hotels around downtown Omaha over the past 2 weeks. All COVID-negative members of the NC State traveling party returned home to Raleigh and were greeted by thousands of fans at a welcome party. And those members will now have to quarantine for at least 7 days, including the manager, who's scheduled to report to USA Baseball coming up Wednesday of this week. All the positive members of the NC State traveling party returned home last night via private flight. But what a horrible way for a magical season for NC State to end. Those are some of the facts that took place in the timeline with all the testing, so now you're left to draw your own conclusions. So let's draw those conclusions, shall we? First of all, let's go ahead and get politics involved, because there's nothing anymore that doesn't involve politics. Apparently, there's been a years-long feud between North Carolina Republicans and the NCAA. It resurfaced over the weekend as party leaders in North Carolina protested the organization's decision Saturday to declare NC State's baseball game against Vanderbilt a no contest and eliminate the Wolfpack from the College World Series championship contention. The NCAA made the decision with the Douglas County Health Department in Omaha, where the tournament is being played. The Wolfpack was deemed unable to compete after several players tested positive for COVID-19. But in a post on social media just hours after the decision was made, former Governor Pat McCrory called it absurd. McCrory, who was running in the Republican primary election for the seat of retiring U.S. Senator Richard Burr, started an online petition demanding that the NCAA president be fired and the Wolfpack be allowed to compete. Other prominent North Carolina Republicans joined the fight as well. No consistency in their health concerns. In an interview with the News and Observer on Sunday, McCrory said the NCAA's decisions have been extremely inconsistent regarding the virus. He pointed out that fans were allowed into the stadium without mask or test for the virus, as well as differing policies on mask requirements for coaches and players. You wonder if all this is just political inconsistency by the NCAA and many elected officials. Does the virus recognize the difference between a coach and a player, between the fans and the players? So forth and so on. Now, politicians in North Carolina said they don't object to fans being allowed in the stadium, but said not testing them while setting different requirements for the players is inconsistent. You wonder if it's often about money. Well, that's not even a question anymore. It's all about the money, you think? The NCAA COVID-19 protocols impacted the team even ahead of the disqualification. As we just stated earlier, they were several players short in their loss to Vanderbilt on Friday. So, obviously, and then McCrory went on to say, the NCAA handed the announcement, which was first made in a tweet just after 2 a.m. Saturday morning, as cowardly. So there's some very strong words from politicians in North Carolina who aren't happy about how the NCAA has handled this. As we know, the NCAA, as some people point out, is maybe one of the most corrupt organizations. They were shot down by the Supreme Court by a 9-0 decision recently in regards to players having the right to market themselves and name, image, likeness, so forth and so on. The NCAA is scrambling right now. Their leadership of the NCAA has been, abysmal is probably not even fair enough. It's probably worse than that. Mark Emmert has done a very poor job of leading the NCAA, if you even want to call it that. And the NCAA's got some major problems, and this adds to the black eyes that they have. It's not even speculating. This is not even drawing conclusions. I just want to put this out there. I know it's hypothetical, but I want people to think about this, because here's my thing. I don't think anybody was in danger. If you're having all kinds of welcoming parties at the hotels, and you're having all these fans come into Omaha and show up at games without knowing whether to test or not tested, there's no mask wearing, and now all of a sudden we're drawing the line with NC State, which did have multiple positive tests. Couldn't there have been a way for us to get this done? I don't know if delaying it a couple days would have done anything. Delaying it a couple weeks was not an option. It just seems like there could be a way for NC State, like they did on Friday, to play. Even though they're shorthanded, at least they're able to compete and play. And I know it'd be tough to win, but at least they are able to play. But to make it to the national semifinals, you've worked all year long, make it to the national semifinals, and you have to forfeit. No contest, whatever, it's a forfeit. And you're told by the NCAA you have to forfeit. You don't want to. The NCAA is saying, listen, dude, you didn't meet all the COVID protocols. You're done. You're out. So now you have one game you could have played on Saturday that, if you would have won, would have put you in the College World Series Championship Series. Instead, you automatically have to quit. You're forced to quit. And Vanderbilt gets the automatic berth into the College World Series Championship Series, which it's all SEC final. How convenient. Vanderbilt versus Mississippi State with the best of three series in Omaha starting tonight. Couple of questions here. First of all, there are people that feel the NC State, listen, they knew the protocol. Not everybody got vaccinated, and that's their fault. Now they have to deal with the repercussions. And other teams did a better job of taking care of not getting COVID-19. That's how some people look at it. Others say, listen, there were vaccinated players that were positive for COVID-19. So it doesn't matter whether you're vaccinated or not. And NC State's punished for all that. The other argument, of course, is, well, you let all these fans in. They don't get tested. You don't know if they're positive or whatever. You don't test them when they go into the gates at the stadium. You do not have them wearing masks. And now you have a different rule for the players on the field. Interesting point as well. Here's my question. Because baseball is not nearly as big a deal in college. No offense to baseball players out there, but baseball is not a gigantic revenue-making sport. There are two money-making generating sports, by far and away the biggest generating sports in college at the Division I level. We all know football, and then the NCAA men's basketball tournament. Those are the cash cows. baseball is not considered a cash cow. Maybe it'll become bigger and better and whatever. But I want to ask this question, and I do understand it's a hypothetical, but you can answer this yourself, and you probably know where I'm going. The college football playoff this year was four teams, correct? That's the national semifinals. The College World Series in baseball, Saturday, well, actually Friday, and then the Saturday, that was the national semifinals, okay? You had Texas against Mississippi State, and you had NC State versus Vanderbilt. That is your semifinals. You had a team, a field of eight, narrowed down to four. NC State only had to win one out of two games to make it to the national championship series in baseball. So you were down to the final four, the national semifinals in baseball. And NC State is forced to forfeit, or no contest, whatever you want to call it. Now, you know who the four teams were in college football this year in the playoff? Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, Notre Dame. All marquee names, correct? Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Alabama. Let me ask you this question. If Alabama, Ohio State, Clemson, or Notre Dame, any one of those four, would have had the same situation as North Carolina State when it came to their baseball situation Friday and Saturday, do you believe that one team would have had to have said no contest and you would have had a team get a bye into the national championship game? For instance, do you think if Notre Dame and Alabama were playing, and Alabama is the one that had the problems with COVID, do you think Notre Dame would be just given a free pass to the national championship and Alabama would be forced to no contest? Can you imagine the wrath the NCAA would catch from the SEC and Alabama? Are you kidding me? The NCAA might be burned at the stake if that happened. Can you imagine that happened to Ohio State or Clemson? Folks, I don't believe that at all. And I'll tell you why. Because it's a difference of sport and it's a difference of what team is in the situation. If baseball was college football and NC State was a brand name like Alabama, Notre Dame, Ohio State, or Clemson, you cannot convince me that a team would have been forced to quit because of COVID positive tests. They would have found a way to have enough players on the field to play a college football playoff semifinal. I can assure you of that. Or they would have delayed it. You know why? Money. Money, money, money. Losing one game, NC State Vanderbilt, maybe costs a little bit of money, but it's nothing. Nothing to the NCAA. Nothing to college sports than a football playoff. Now, here's the thing. The football playoff, by the way, is not governed by the NCAA. So let's point that out, okay? So you can say, Wade, you're on the right track, but the NCAA doesn't govern the playoff. So, of course, that's going to be different. Poor example, Wade. Okay, I hear you. I hear you. I hear you. Okay. So let me go to something that is governed by the NCAA, and you help me answer the question. So the football one, the excuse would be, well, the NCAA doesn't govern it, and the College Football Playoff Committee, and they would make sure there was a replacement if Notre Dame had all kinds of positive COVID tests 2 days before the game against Alabama in the semifinals. They would find out a way for Notre Dame to have enough players to play, or Alabama, or Ohio State, or Clemson. Okay, fine. Let's go ahead and erase that example. Fine. Let's rewind. Let's go to the next example. The NCAA tournament, men's basketball tournament, is a multi-billion dollar tool for the NCAA. It's billions of dollars they get from TV. So let me ask you this question. It's the Final Four. It's Kentucky, Duke, Kansas, and Michigan State. Let's just pick those four. Just pick those four. Or throw in, I don't know, throw in Creighton as a sleeper, Cinderella run, in place of one of those big dogs I just told you. Do you believe that the NCAA tournament, do you believe, now granted, we did have VCU in the tournament this last year, had to forfeit a game or had to drop out because of COVID. So there was one game that wasn't played in the tournament this year, but that was a first round game. Do you believe that if you made it to the national semifinals in, well, let's see, a couple years ago, it was in San Antonio. Do you believe your two national semifinals are set and Duke or Kentucky or Kansas, whoever, ends up having some positive tests on their team? Do you believe the NCAA would give up one of their two national semifinal games, which is what everybody's watching in sports? Remember, it's a doubleheader. There's semifinal games, what, 5:07 and 8:07 at a neutral site? And then, of course, the two winners move on 2 days later to the national championship game. Do you believe the NCAA would be like, yeah, you know, we'll just pull the plug on this one? And then somebody's got a Duke and Kentucky, and we got Kansas and Creighton. All right, Kansas and Creighton cleared all the protocols. Duke has a couple positive tests. Kentucky, congratulations. You can walk into the finals. You'll play the winner of Kansas-Creighton. Do you really, truly believe that would happen? Maybe you do. I don't. I think what would happen is somehow you would have a replacement in that situation, although the NCAA said this year they would not have had that had happened. Had that have happened, they would not have had a replacement. So we're led to believe that if the same situation in baseball with NC State would have happened in the Final Four, the NCAA tournament, we are led to believe, based on all the protocol and all the rules and everything that they stated, that if Duke or Kentucky were playing each other and one of those teams had COVID-19 issues in the national semifinals, that the one would have to just have a no contest and the other would walk into the finals. And thus, we would not have that game that would make a whole bunch of money. And I would guess there would be something with a TV situation and revenue for the NCAA. I don't have all the particulars in front of me. Call me not pessimistic. Call me, what's the word I'm looking for? I can't come up with a word, but I just think it would be different. And I think it helps from a baseball standpoint what the NCAA and how it went. I think it helps that it wasn't a traditional power in baseball. It wasn't, say, an Alabama, just a traditional name in sports in the SEC. I wonder if it was Texas, if that would have happened to Texas, because they're still alive, or they were alive until they lost that last game in Mississippi State. But baseball isn't as big of a revenue-generating sport, even the College World Series, as the NCAA tournament and the Final Four. That is like, I mean, for crying out loud, people fill out a whole bunch of brackets and are resting, they're betting money on these games and their office pools, and all of a sudden you're like, what? Duke has to forfeit and Kentucky moves on? That's a bunch of crud. Couldn't they have delayed it a day or two and made this work, or at least had somebody on the floor? And I just truly believe that they would have delayed something in the national semifinals. They would have done something to where they would have at least put, Duke might only had six players available to play. The NCAA would not have said no contest. They would have told Duke, I don't care if it's a walk-on, Duke, you find enough players, we got to play the game. And then it'd be up to Duke to forfeit. And you know they weren't going to do that. So I know it's a hypothetical. I get it. But I think it's a completely different animal, and I don't think it'd be handled nearly the way it was with NC State in the College World Series. Now, I'm not saying what the NCAA did was the wrong thing to do, because I can only go off the details I have. They thought there was an outbreak. NC State had four players test positive. I understand the concern there. I will ask this question, though. You know how many people are dying of COVID-19 right now? Less than 0.001% or something. It's really minuscule, okay, the percentage. Now, I know if you lose a loved one with COVID-19, that seems callous. But I'm just talking about the young people are not, I mean, yes, there are some, I'm sure. But what I'm saying is young people are not, they're not dying from COVID-19 at some kind of rapid rate or anything like that. You all can get sick and get the flu. You can die of influenza. You can die of COVID-19. You can die of asthma attacks and don't have your inhaler. You can die of cardiac arrest. I mean, you can die of all kinds of things. And we've now got vaccinations. We now have, we understand, we believe we have things under control. Whether there's a variant out there that's going to mess it all up, who knows? They had protocols in place. NC State either followed the protocols and it didn't matter, or they didn't follow the protocols and they got guys that are tested positive, so forth and so on. But the NCAA said, listen, you're not going to be able to play. You got to play with half your team. Now you can't play at all for your last game of the season. That could have punched your ticket in the national championship. But if that were the same thing in the NCAA Final Four, do you think the NCAA would handle it the same exact way? I have my doubts. I have my doubts. I know it's a hypothetical, but you can answer that question as much as I can answer that question. I feel like there's a lot more money on the line with the NCAA men's Final Four, and obviously a college football playoff that's not governed by the NCAA, but I don't see anybody running those institutions that would pull the plug on a national semifinal because of COVID-19. They'd find a way. Either they delay it or find a replacement team, or the team that has positive tests, they would go ahead and let the guys that are tested negative play as long as they had, you know, five guys. Maybe that's it. You got five. They're going to play the whole game. So be it. You have enough guys to play. And here's a question. What happens if today Vanderbilt tests positive for COVID-19, some of their players? Does that mean that Mississippi State's crowned the champion? I mean, it should, right? I mean, based on how NC State was handled, if Vanderbilt ends up having positive tests today, shouldn't Mississippi State just automatically be handed a national championship trophy? Do you believe if Vanderbilt today has positive tests, do you believe there will be no College World Series championship series? Because I believe there will be. I believe it will be delayed. You know why? Because they don't want to crown a champion that way. Who does? Surely even the NCAA doesn't want to crown a champion that way. And they also want to benefit from a three-game best of three series. Losing one game financially, probably not too big of a deal for the NCAA, but you lose another possible three and put a big, just huge black eye on the College World Series. Stay tuned. But the NCAA has been the whipping boy here recently, and there are a lot of people that are very upset. And I can't imagine how NC State feels. Their players, their fans, their coaches. You get all excited. You beat Vanderbilt in the first round. You got to the College World Series as an underdog. You're one win away from making it to the College World Series finals. Then you have to play with half your roster and still almost beat Vanderbilt. Then you're not even allowed to compete the second time you're supposed to play Vanderbilt with a winner-take-all to get to the National Championship Series. I can't imagine. I do have an idea. If you just go back a couple years ago, COVID-19, what happened to, for instance, the Beloit boys basketball team or any other team in the state of Kansas, whether it was girls or boys basketball? You got to the state semifinals and your season was ended abruptly, which some people still today, and I think hindsight's 2020 a little bit because we know a lot more now than we did then. I thought we could have played those games with no fans. That was what I thought they would do. They didn't, and there's a lot of fear out there. And so we ended up having no state semifinals or state championship games. And I know, talking to parents of some of the kids, and I do know talking to some of the coaches as well, it was gut-wrenching. You work so hard, and it's a high school level. You work so hard. The kids work so hard. All those teams and players and coaches and the fans supporting them and the parents. And to get that far and be robbed of the opportunity, not on purpose by Acacia or by even the state of Kansas. It was something unprecedented. You heard that word 1,000 times, haven't we? It was something that people didn't know much about. We were all fearful, and we let fear drive our decisions, quite honestly. We were being cautious, and that's what happened. Now, the Beloit boys basketball team wasn't the only one in that boat. There are many, many other teams that were in that same boat, okay, all the classifications. There are four teams every class on both sides, female and male, boys and girls. That doesn't make you feel any better, though, for you individually because you're like, dude, we're two wins away from a state title. We put in all this work in the offseason. We were in the weight room. We did this. We did that. We got there, and it was taken away. Now, you can say that's not fair. And I can come back with life is not fair. And we have to get in real world And in real life, things are taken away from us. We lose loved ones unexpectedly. That's not fair. People get cancer diagnoses, and that's not fair. And so forth and so on. But you still understand the point. You put in all that work, there's no guarantee there is a payoff. There is no guarantee you put in all the work, no matter what you do in real life or in sports, there is no guarantee there's a payoff. But you work and you work and you work to obtain a goal, and you get to close to your goal, and you're so close you can taste it, and then it's completely taken away. It's one thing if you lose. That sucks. You get all the way to the state championship game, and you lose by 2 points on a buzzer beater. That sucks. But at least you got to play, right? You at least got to play it out. What is much, much worse is that when you're not allowed to compete, right? And it stinks if you're a player that's really good, or any player for that matter. You're a senior, and in the state semifinals, you turn your ankle and you can't play in the state championship. That's not fair, is it? Life's not fair. We get that. But my point to the story is that these teams in the state of Kansas and across the country, there are many that didn't get to finish their state basketball tournaments. They at least have others they can share that experience with. Not that that makes it much better. NC State has no one. They had a tremendous run. They get to the College World Series. Fans are allowed to come in left and right. No testing. Don't know vaccinated, not vaccinated. Don't know if they have COVID or not. They don't get tested right at the front. I don't know how you would even make that work anyway. There's no mask. There's no social distancing. And that's okay. And then there's these welcome parties and lots of people at the hotels. And it's not just for NC State. There's other schools that are doing it too. So now it's like, is NC State just the dumbest because they caught COVID? Or are they the unluckiest? Or did they do a lot of things that every other team at the College World Series didn't do, and they deserve what they're getting right now? I'm going to tell you something. The kids that aren't positive don't deserve it. But the kids are positive. It's not like they can control getting positive. And when you sit here and say, well, they should have been vaccinated. They're idiots. They didn't get vaccinated. Let me repeat, four players were vaccinated were positive. They end up having, what, 6 or 8 positives? 4 were vaccinated people. So that argument falls on deaf ears. So can you imagine what you're going through as NC State right now? You have worked so hard to get to this point. No other team's going through this. No one else is dealing with this. You, NC State, are told at 1 a.m. in the morning, your season's over. Thanks for coming. Oh, by the way, we're so worried about COVID-19. You guys can go ahead and run on over to the stadium and take a picture all together near home plate. Which, hey, I guess that's better than nothing. You can sense the sarcasm from people across the country, and you can hear the anger from NC State fans, as you can imagine. And you can imagine, well, we already told you, the politics involved as well. Whether or not the NCAA did the right thing or not, this is a black eye again for the NCAA. And I just feel like we somehow time warped back into June of 2020. I thought we could handle all this now. Like, I feel like we've gone back a year with NC State not being allowed to compete. I would hope the NCAA looked into all options to allow NC State to compete. Somebody suggested, what if Vanderbilt and Mississippi State and Texas would have all refused to play and said, listen, this isn't right. We're just not going to play, and let's going to reschedule later in the week. Now, I don't know later in the week if the facility in Omaha is even available to play in. Then you have to stay in the hotels longer. So forth and so on. And the NCAA might have just said, you know what, we got nowhere to play these games if you want to play it that way and wait till NC State's healthy. So we're just going to have to call off the tournament. Now you've pretty much, you know, shot yourself in the foot. So I understand why Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and Texas didn't do that, but there was somebody that suggested that idea. It stinks. Life's not fair. NC State, were they robbed? This depends how you look at it. You can say, well, they were robbed because of COVID. You can say they're robbed because of the NCAA and the handling of all this. Or you can say they did it to themselves. You figure out which side of the coin you're on. It just is a complete bummer. And for some of you who don't understand the angst of the situation, Imagine your favorite team in any sport. Imagine the Royals going to the World Series and suddenly have to say, you know what, we have to give up, we're done, we can't play because of COVID-19. Imagine the Kansas City Chiefs make the Super Bowl and too many players have COVID. Sorry, the Denver Broncos, whatever the case may be. Imagine the Denver Nuggets get into the conference finals in basketball, NBA got a forfeit because of COVID-19. Imagine the Kansas State or Oklahoma or Nebraska football teams making it to the Big 12 championship game or the college football playoff, and they've got a forfeit no contest because of COVID-19. Just insert your favorite team in place of NC State, and you tell me how you'd feel about it. Because I know there's a few people that don't get it because they don't care because it's not their team, because it's not in my backyard, so why would I give a flip about it? These are young men that have really worked hard to get where they got. They worked so hard and got there, and then they were told, you're done. And like I said, it's not fair. It stinks. It is what it is, and I hope we don't see anybody else have to go through this. Now, how does that set the table for the future? A lot of people are excited, right, about college football returning. We're going to have full capacity at Bill Snyder Family Stadium, full capacity at Oklahoma, full capacity at Oklahoma, full capacity at Kansas, but you don't need it because it's KU football. That's my joke. There's not going to be social distancing. People aren't going to be wearing masks, I don't believe. And you're not going to know who's vaccinated, who isn't vaccinated, okay? But there's the thing. When it comes to the college sports and the teams and pro teams as well down the line, you're going to have situations possibly where this won't be the last time you see a team have to forfeit like NC State did. Because, for instance, if you get in a situation where, let's just use Kansas State as an example, they have, how many scholarship players are there? 80? 85? What is the number now? Anyway, let's just say 80 for fun. And let's say 60 of those football players, Chris Klein and his staff, really encourage the players to be vaccinated. 60 of those players are vaccinated, right? So now they don't have to be tested. At least they weren't in regards to NCAA for baseball. But the 20 that are unvaccinated, and by the way, you have a card to prove if you're vaccinated or not. So it's not like a fan. It's going to, you know, fans are going to be showing this at games, but maybe that will be the case at some places. Be a little bit tougher to go through all that. But with the athletes, there's only so many athletes you've got to check. You check their vaccination cards. Okay, you had your first shot. So you're not fully vaccinated yet. Okay, you've had both shots. You're vaccinated. You don't have to be tested. All right, Jerry, you have not been vaccinated. Okay, you're going to be tested on a regular basis. And so whether it's two people on the team or 20 people or half the team that goes unvaccinated, they are putting their team at risk of having to forfeit or give up games based on protocol and rules that are, for instance, NFL's already talked about how there's going to be major consequences and fines for people that are not vaccinated for the NFL games. And then, of course, so it comes now, it comes down to, it's all about, we hear all about team working together. We got to work good in the OTAs and training camps, and we got to work together and build this chemistry. And it's important what we put together on the field, and we got to have this chemistry working together. The teams in the National Football League, I'll use that as an example right now. The National Football League, the teams that have the best leadership and the teams that are understanding the repercussions of not getting vaccinated, if certain players don't, could really hurt the team down the road for winning a championship. The teams that are going to be most vaccinated or maybe even completely vaccinated perhaps are going to have an advantage over teams whose players like Cole Beasley say, I'm not getting vaccinated, I'm not doing it, this and this, whatever and whatever, and we don't think it's right to be punished if we're not vaccinated. It's our choice, which I understand that point. Don't get me wrong. I'm just telling you, that's the NFL's standpoint is, listen, you're not vaccinated, there's going to be an issue possibly. The teams that are the mostly vaccinated or completely vaccinated are going to have a better chance, obviously, of avoiding having players knocked out of a game due to testing. So we sit here and we say, please let that be the only time this happens. NC State, the only school that's going to have to go no contest and not get to play in a game. Maybe this is just the beginning of what we might see down the line in professional sports and collegiate sports. Something to ponder. All right, the NBA playoffs, the Hawks-Bucks game 3 was last night. And the Bucks were in some trouble until Trae Young got hurt. More on that in a moment.
Here's Giannis going right at Lou Williams and putting it down. Giannis up top, watched by Collins. Giannis spinning his way and goes to the finger roll. Middleton for three. Yes. Middleton, oh, he's filling it now.
Bucks win game three in Atlanta last night, 113-102. They take a 2-1 series lead over the Hawks. The Hawks led most of the contest, but the Bucks rallied 20 points in the fourth quarter, and Chris Middleton by himself. He ended up with 38 total points, a playoff career high. That, despite 35 points for Trae Young. Giannis had 33, but the game turned when Trae Young stepped on the foot of an official in the third quarter, immediately left the game and went to the locker room. That was a moment that might have swung the game in the series to the Bucks. Young had 32 points when he left the game. He had 3 points on 1-of-4 shooting in the fourth on his bad ankle. The Bucks won the quarter by 13 points. Young's plan is to play in game four, but that doesn't mean he'll be himself. He says he's sore, and the plan is to get as much treatment as he can before game four. So stay tuned. The Bucks in the driver's seat now, it looks like, in that series in the Eastern Conference Finals. The NBA Western Conference Finals tonight, it is the Suns and the Clippers. We shift back to Phoenix. The Clippers losing a low-scoring, hard-fought, bad-shooting fourth-quarter game in Game 4. Clippers had every opportunity to win that game. They did not, so it could have been 2-2. Instead, it's 3-1 Suns. Chance for the Suns to close it out tonight in Phoenix. And, yes, Kawhi Leonard is out again for Game 5. No surprise there. It's interesting with each game, people act surprised that Kawhi Leonard's out. Dude, he ain't going to play. If Clippers even come back for 3-1, I don't think Kawhi Leonard's playing again this year. And I think they're very mum in the camp with Kawhi Leonard, but I believe there might be more damage to that knee than people are letting out, and they're going to wait until the season's officially over before that information probably comes out. That's just me speculating on that. But Kawhi Leonard, I would be shocked if he – I would be not shocked, I guess, but I'd be very surprised if he – even if the Clippers come back and make the NBA Finals, if he plays at all the rest of the season. But he is out for tonight's game, which is no surprise to us. The Portland Trail Blazers have made the Los Angeles Clippers assistant coach Chauncey Billups, former great player in the NBA, played with the Pistons for a good chunk of his career, also played for the Nuggets. The 15th head coach in franchise history. The length of the deal is 5 years. The NHL finals are set. It is game one tonight. The worst TV deal in the history of sports, at least for the big time sports. NBC Sports Network. Because NBC would rather have regular programming than game one of the NHL Stanley Cup finals. Yes, sir. And who could blame them? You know? NBC's market isn't Montreal, I don't think. So Montreal Canadiens versus the Tampa Bay Lightning. And Tampa Bay, you know, Tampa's not a gigantic market. You know, if it's the Islanders and Islanders and the Bruins, it'd be, you know, maybe somehow they shift it to NBC. NBC Sports Network has games 1 and 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. Then suddenly game 3, we shift to NBC. So tonight, it is 7 o'clock, NBC Sports Network. If you can find it on the TV dial, Canadiens Lightning, Game 1. Lightning trying to go back-to-back. They're the defending Stanley Cup champions. And we finish with golf. Did you see what took place yesterday? Guys I've never heard of. Cramer Hickok and Harris English provided maybe the best sports drama of the day. They both had 7 straight pars in an 8-hole playoff at the Travelers Championship. Harris English eventually emerges the winner. He sunk a birdie putt on the 8th playoff hole. So they basically had to play another half a round to determine who was going to win yesterday in the Travelers Championship. It matched the second longest sudden death playoff in PGA Tour history. 8 playoff holes. Everybody. The two guys, Harris and Cramer. He's on Seinfeld. Harris and Cramer. 7 straight pars. Just par, 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 par. No bogey, no double bogeys, just par, 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 par. Finally a birdie on the 8th playoff hole. And the winner is Harris English. So that's a wrap here on the Sports Ticket. Don't forget, we'll be having the ticket again tomorrow, so stay tuned for that at 9:10. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.